A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on August 10, 1986, in the series God's Prodigal Love, entitled I Wish I Could Start Over. The scripture reading is Luke 15, verses 11 through 24. The text for the sermon is 2 Corinthians 15, verse 17. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
He said, start out the way you did the first time. I said, how did I start out? He said, I don't remember. But it was good, he said. Oh, Gordon. He was telling me about when he used to, when he had his own church, that from which we delivered him some, 15 years ago? About 11 o'clock at night, he said he used to take his sermon and tear it up. And I know the feeling. But then at 11:30, he'd be taping it back together. It's a miserable business. I don't recommend it. Jesus told this story in order to explain his behavior. He was being criticized by the religious leaders of the day because the magnetism of his person just spontaneously drew people to him. You can tell when someone has about them an air of grace, of openness, of acceptance that allows you to come and feel accepted. You can feel when someone opens themselves up to you so that you can just be who you are and tell it like it is. And Jesus obviously was that kind of person. People just came to him. And the religious leaders criticized him because of the kind of people that came to him. They were the kind of people that religious people generally don't associate with. One of the unfortunate things about the church, and that's who was criticizing him. It was the church that was criticizing him. One of the unfortunate things about the church is that, you know, a good, honest sinner wouldn't be caught dead there. But they came to Jesus because somehow or other they knew that the yearning and the longing within their hearts would be satisfied in him. They knew they could come. They knew he would touch them. He would throw his arms around them. He would embrace them in the grace of his own person. And so they came, and so he was criticized, and so he said, look, what I am is simply a mirror of who God is. What I do is simply a reflection of the heart of God, who would say to all of his children, my son, my daughter, come home. Why do you flee? Why do you run scared? Why do you resist? All I want is for you to come home and to be whole and to realize fully the potential that I created you in you. So Jesus, in order to make that clear and to explain his behavior as a reflection of the heart of God, told this story to those who were grumbling about his openness to all people. And he told the story about the two sons, which is really a story not about two boys, but about a father's prodigal love. And we've been looking at this through the eyes of the younger son primarily, although we recognize that both sons really live within us at one time or another. But we've been looking at the parable as a movement through the eyes of the younger son who didn't believe he could be who he wanted to be in his own father's house. He felt he needed to set himself free, to liberate himself. He was seeking autonomy. He wanted to be a law to himself. He didn't want any crimping of his style, any limits, no parameters set by anybody. And so he said, "Give me my inheritance and let me go. I want to do it on my own." And he did. And it didn't take him very long to see that a life that is simply self-indulgent, that's not lived for any purpose beyond one's own personal prerogative and pleasure, is a life that very soon becomes empty. It becomes boring. It actually becomes dull. And it didn't take him very long to say, "Is that all there is?" And then that recognition of emptiness was really the beginning, the dawning of grace that enabled him to say, "I wish I could start over. I wish I could begin again." He came to himself and he said, "I wish I could do it over." He came to himself, Jesus said. Or the New English Bible has, he came to his senses. It's a very, very remarkable phrase and the kind of experience that God is waiting for all of us to have, to come to ourselves, so that our response is finally that which is not coerced out of us, something that we're not manipulated into, but something that is a reflection of the deepest nature within us, the highest, noblest, best longings within our hearts. "I want to do it over. I wish I could do it over again." I think we've all had that kind of feeling and emotion at some time or another. It's a very common experience. Our lives are filled with decisions, and every decision we make takes us down one track or another. And before long, a whole web of decisions have gotten us into a situation, and most of us at some time or another have said, "I wish I could do it over. I wish I had continued my education." Or, "I wish I had chosen this profession rather than that." Or, "I wish I had decided to marry." Or, "I wish I had decided not to marry. I wish we'd had a family." Or, "I wish we hadn't had so many of these wonderful gifts from heaven." Sometimes one marries at a very young age before one has become who one eventually will become and wakes up one day and says, "You know, how did the two of us get together? I wish I could do it over again." There are all kinds of situations in life where we wish we could do it over. But you know, it's the very nature of human existence. It's the very essence of our lives that we can't do it over. We can start over, but we can't do it over. What we do is to write a story, and we are all writing a story, and we write the story in our own script, and that script will stand. It's the very nature of our human existence that we live in the swim of history. We live in the stream of history. We are moved along, and we do make decisions. At every turn, we make decisions, and every decision that we make takes us down one road or another. And if I decide this, I go here, and then there, and then there. Whereas if I had back here decided here, I might have gone here, there, and another place. But as a matter of fact, I come one day to find out that where I am is the representation of a tapestry that has been woven by the threads of 1,000 little decisions, and maybe a few big ones. And you can't undo it. We cannot reverse time. We cannot unravel history. We have written a story, and the script is there, and we can't wipe it out. "I wish I could do it over." No, you can't do it over. But you can start again. You can begin anew. That's the message of this parable. Most of us never have the courage to look long enough and hard enough at our lives to really discern the design that we've created. It takes a lot of courage to come to oneself. That's the moment of truth. To come to oneself is the moment of truth, and many of us live without ever really understanding what's going on inside us. We live with a lot of denial in our lives. Sometimes it's unconscious. We've got all kinds of defense mechanisms that have equipped us to avoid the moment of truth. We expend a lot of energy suppressing it, keeping it under, never really coming to say, "So that's who I am." Some of us do it consciously. We run and run and run and refuse ever to look in the mirror in depth and say, "Who am I really?" But the younger son came to himself. He came to his senses. And coming to his senses, he came to the moment of truth. And he said, "I wish I could start over." Coming to oneself, coming to that moment of truth, is perhaps the result of some crisis or some trauma, or maybe it's just a treadmill existence that goes on and on until we wake up one day and say, "My life doesn't mean anything. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything." Whether it's a treadmill existence and boredom, or whether it's a crisis and a point of trauma, whatever it is, to come to the point where I want more than anything else really to know who I am, that can be devastating and terribly liberating. That's a marvelous moment. The elder brother stayed home and went out into the fields every day, but I doubt that he ever came to himself. But the younger son, bearing his scars, paying the price, nonetheless came to the point where he said, "I want to start over." And the message this morning is that you can start over. And what's involved in that? Well, I suppose to begin with, there is the conscious owning of my story. As I said a moment ago, you can't unravel it. And you can't deny it. We have written a script and it is there. That's the way history is. That's the way human existence is. That's the way our lives are. To come to oneself is not to deny the past. We're done with denial when we get to this point. We're done with keeping it all under and holding it all in. We really want to know at this point. We want to face the truth. It's owning our story. Not being boastful about it. Maybe having remorse. Maybe regret. Maybe just being rather indifferent to it all, but owning our story, saying, "Yes, that's who I am." In the story that Jesus told, there was no recrimination on the part of the younger son over against his elder brother, even though it was probably his elder brother that sent him out. In the younger son, we see no rationalization of why he was in the far country. There was no blaming of his father for being the authoritarian type that any kid would want to flee. There was no wallowing in self-pity. There was no putting of himself down. There was simply saying, "This is who I am, this is where I am, and I want to start over. I have to own my own life. I am who I am, and I have the story written that I have written, and there is nothing in the world that can unravel it, and I simply have to own it. That's who I am." I met a colleague not so long ago who came up to me, and he had a look of consternation on his face, and he said to me, "I am ready to move. Ben Dye said, "You are?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "It's time for me to go. Nobody's telling me I have to go, but," he said, "I know I have to go." He said, "You know, I have been in the ministry X number of years, and I have all of those years lived behind a mask. I have played a role." He said, "My people don't know who I am. I simply have to start over." And then he looked at me and he said, "You know, that's what you've got going for you with your people. They know who you are. Somehow or other, you've been able to be honest in their midst." And I said to them, "Ah, thank you. But not by my choice. I didn't have the courage to be that way. It was the trauma of my own life. It was the failure, the fallibility, the flaw, the falling on my face that ripped away the mask, that made all pretense go. So that here was a people who had a pastor who had clay feet, who was human, all too human. I didn't choose to be so courageous." He said, "Well, that helps." I said, "Well, I hope you don't need a crisis like I had in order to get there." Comes a time when one simply has to say, "This is who I am." Not explaining oneself, not rationalizing oneself, not blaming anyone else, simply saying, "This is who I am." And I suppose beyond the owning of his own story, the younger son is an example to us, because in the story Jesus told, he acted on the insight he gained. He had the courage to get up and go home. Some of us have a sneaking suspicion of what the real case may be, but we do not have the courage to get up and act on it. The younger son said, "I will arise and go to my father." And then he got himself a very well-rehearsed speech. He said, "Father, I'll say, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. It's my responsibility. I own it. It's mine. I am to blame for it. I have no more claim upon you, no more claim on sonship. But please, just make me a servant and give me 3 squares a day. The young boy still didn't know anything about grace. He didn't know what he was in for, but he did know this, that he had come to the moment of truth from which he would move out. He acted on his insight. To come to oneself and to admit where one is probably would be the biblical word repentance. That word in the Greek language means to change one's mind. And then probably to arise and go home would be what we speak of through the word conversion, which is a turnabout, turning around, going 180 degrees in the other direction. It takes courage to repent, to change one's mind. It takes courage to be converted, to turn around and to go back. It's not easy to say, "This is who I am," in the face of one's father, in the face of one's family, in the face of one's community, in the face of one who have always had one image, and then to say, "This is who I am." But Jesus said, "Except we be converted and become as little children, we will not enter the kingdom of heaven." And maybe he had the courage to do it, not because the far country was so desolate, but because the remembrance of home was so compelling. Let's just reflect on the father again for a moment, because that's what the story's all about. The old man just let him go. He just let him go without protest, without manipulation, without coercion. He let him go without threat. He let him go without recrimination. So often in our human relationships, there's brokenness because we retaliate anger for anger, blow for blow, wound for wound. And if you offend me, I react, and a wall grows between us. And there's not only the alienation of a broken relationship, but there's all kinds of barriers erected because of words said and actions and body language. And when the son came to himself, when he woke up, when he said, "Is that all there is?" When he said, "I want to go home," He could entertain the thought. He could actually get up and go because he remembered the Father. He remembered that there was sadness in his eyes. He knew that as he disappeared down the road, the Father was still looking for him. And so he returned. And Jesus was saying, God is like that. He let him go because he knew he could coerce him to stay in his house and still not have him home. He let him go because he knew that until he came to himself, he would never be what God intended him to be anyway. He knew that a relationship of love and trust is a relationship that's freely given, spontaneous, that happens, that is not manipulated and coerced. He let him go because he knew that only when finally he came to himself and said, I want to start over, I want to come home, he would not be where the Father wanted him to be. And that's the marvelous story of the gospel. That's what Jesus lived out. That's what he was explaining in this story. That his behavior was a reflection of the attitude and the spirit of God who says, my child, why don't you come home? To all of our yabbats and all of our explanations and our rationalizations and all of our defenses, he says, put them all down. You don't need them. They're not necessary. Why don't you just come home? The young boy didn't know what he was in for. He had his speech well rehearsed. He was all ready to negotiate a deal. He was going to come with a proper humility and seek only a moderate kind of a solution to his difficulty and his dilemma. He didn't have any idea about the love that was about to overwhelm him, which will be next week, which I can hardly wait for. But the Father had at least communicated to him the possibility that he could start over again. And so wherever you are, weary, bored, tired, guilty, afraid, bogged down, wherever you're coming from, whatever your story, whatever the script to this point, whatever chapter you have completed or whatever chapter you're in the midst of, the good news of the message is you can start writing a new story. You can start over. You can begin again. And that's really not something that's just a once-for-all kind of thing. It's too wonderful a thing to be just a once-for-all kind of thing. There is certainly a point of beginning of Christian pilgrimage, but we all get off on a sidetrack, a dead end, and wake up one day and say, I'd like to start over. And the good news is that all you lack is courage. The grace of God creates the possibility of beginning again. Softly and tenderly, or with a thunderous voice, in the ordinary or the extraordinary, wherever you are, you can start over again. Just come home.